Good morning. We're continuing on the Takeaway, this conversation about the flooding in Pakistan. With me this morning is Miles O'Brien, who is filling in for John Hockenberry. And the news coming out of Pakistan is distressing, to say the least.
Well, right now we are providing medical services over here, but the people of this area where we are working now, they're in dire need of food, shelter and water. They will require this for at least next 90 days, which is, you know, the relief period set up by the UN and also, you know, for the people.
Ifan Khan, who works with the British-based charity Muslim Hands in Pakistan. It has been 3 weeks since floodwaters first began to overtake Pakistan. Officials fear there's more flooding on the way. So far, 20 million people have been affected. Tens of thousands of villages are underwater. The UN has asked for $459 million in relief aid. So far, they've gotten offers for less than half of that, less than 40% of that. The United States has increased its assistance from 10 million to around 80 million, but tomorrow, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will hold a special session to yet again address the need for relief efforts in Pakistan. Why is so little aid being offered for what is by far already the worst natural catastrophe of the decade? Joining us again is Issam Ahmed. He's live from Islamabad. He's a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Good morning, Issam.
Morning, Sarah.
What kind of aid is reaching them, and is it going just to the camps? Is it just are they airlifting people out of areas and then bringing them into places where they can get relief to them?
Well, both things are happening. I mean, it depends on which region of Pakistan you're talking about. But where I just came from in Swat, there's an area called the Kalam Valley, which is a very picturesque hilly, mountainous, snow-capped area. And what they're doing there is they're both airlifting food into those areas rather than people coming into camps. And they're also airlifting people out of those areas who are then going off to making really long treks to marketplaces and then hiking all the way back up the mountain, taking about 2 or 3 days to take food back to their families because the helicopters aren't airlifting them back home. They're just taking them from home to the safe areas.
And among the people of Pakistan, do they feel this sense of frustration that Ban Ki-moon seems to feel? That do they also feel like the world is not helping them as much as they should?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's that growing sense of frustration that, you know, this disaster is, you know, on such a huge scale. It's the area of flooding is larger than the, you know, landmass of England. And as you said, only 40% of that aid, which has been pledged or by the UN, has actually come through at this stage. So at the same time, there's a lot of civil society efforts here within Pakistan. People are taking matters into their own hands. Rich Pakistanis, urban Pakistanis, are raising funds for the victims. But they're not just raising funds. They're actually going out there by themselves, you know, loading goods into cars, loading medical supplies into cars, and just driving out there off their own accord and trying to help those people who have been affected, especially the poor in the villages.
Issam Ahmed is a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Now let's joining us is Michelle Fonzo. She's a project leader for the World Policy Institute. Michelle, explain to me, why is the both public and private sectors so hesitant to pledge support and then deliver that support to Pakistan?
I think we're seeing a convergence of a number of issues happening at the same time. One is compassion fatigue. Haiti absorbed a lot of people's resources, charitable giving. Even the private sector gave a lot to Haiti. And it's only less than half a year later, and once again, there's another disaster. A lot of people have said, well, I gave what I could. Then there is the issue, unfortunately, of the earthquake created 225,000 deaths, whereas the Pakistani flood is creating, right now they're saying 14 million or more affected, but only 1,800 deaths. And unfortunately, terminology does play a role. Affected people don't sound quite as disastrous as a large number of dead people. Unfortunately, affected people desperately need the aid in order to keep going. And
in order
somehow
to avoid that becoming
exactly,
a death toll.
But unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't seem quite as critical. There's a huge geographical difference between where we are and where Pakistan is, whereas with something like Haiti, it was much closer to home. But I also think there's another very large issue at play here, which is a certain concern, maybe skepticism, about what kind of ally has Pakistan been to us in the recent geopolitical concern of Afghanistan, Pakistan, and our role in that region. And I think there's some concern, if we send the money, will it be Will a certain percentage of it go to corruption? Would a certain percentage of it somehow work its way into the insurgent area and be supporting people we don't want to support? I think that plays a role, too.
Well, I mean, obviously, we also had Shu Jianwaz on the show yesterday, who said that people are concerned that they don't know where the money would go and how it would be delivered. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't halt aid from going to NGOs. Is there a problem with the NGOs working with the government on their own?
Not that I'm aware of. And really, one thing I would say, in any natural disaster, especially of this scope, there's going to be a certain percentage of aid that you can't follow every dollar and know where it is. So you have to ask yourself the question, what's the priority here? Is the priority to help the people as much as we can? Or is the priority to, you know, really worry where every dollar is going? And unfortunately, in this kind of fast reaction mode, the answer is you help the people.
Well, is there a timeline here? I mean, as we're talking about, when you talk about the millions of people who are affected and they're worried about waterborne diseases, they don't have clean water. Do we have an urgency in terms of time?
Yes, we have an extreme urgency for a couple of reasons. One, waterborne illness. They already started finding a number of cases of cholera. Cholera spreads very quickly.
Very contagious.
Very contagious. People are still exposed. If they're living in tents, they're still damp. They're still wet. This gets people very sick very quickly. So there's a lot of illness issues. There's also the other issue of who is really delivering the aid in a lot of these areas, which in some cases are the very fundamentalist Islamic charities, which again casts a big doubt on what the government can handle there.
And this is the question. Many people say this is an opportunity for the United States to actually improve relations with the Pakistani people.
Yes.
But the United States has pledged $80 million, which is more than any other country. Is the United States going to get credit for that on the ground in Pakistan?
I would say two things. One is, yes, I believe we will, but we don't. Our priority there is not just to get credit. Our priority is to stabilize the country of Pakistan. It is a nuclear power in an unstable territory, in a volatile area where we're at war. The real goal here is to stabilize the country and help the people. If we get credit, that's great. But I sometimes think we lose sight of what we're really there to do. And yes, I think we will end up giving even more money. We gave $1.1 billion over the course of 6 months to Haiti.
Well, I think the takeaway for me is that the aid needs to get there before that affected word becomes a death toll. Michelle Funzo, project leader for the World Policy Institute, talking about the flooding in Pakistan.